Morning, Oregon, and happy Friday. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thanks for joining me, and I hope you enjoy the show today. This story was first published on October 6th of 2024, under the headline, Bing Cherry Has Its Roots on the Oregon Trail. Here we go. When cherry season rolls around, there's never much doubt about what varieties you'll find in your local grocery store. They'll usually have some white or blush cherries, typically Royal Anne or Rainier, but most of them will be Bings. Among cherry fans, the deep red Bing is the gold standard and has been for well over 100 years now. Rich and sweet, almost like chocolate in its intensity of flavor, the Bing dominates the supermarket and is most people's favorite variety. And there is probably no single fruit that's more closely associated with the state of Oregon than this heavenly cherry, the ancestors of which actually crossed the Oregon Trail and may have saved its fellow travelers on the wagon train from harm at the hands of some fed-up Indian tribes along the way. For all that, we mostly have three fruit-growing brothers to thank, Henderson Llewellyn and his younger brothers John and Seth. Seth, by the way, most often used an earlier and more Welsh spelling of the family name. Henderson, quote-unquote, simplified the spelling when he became a Quaker. The Llewellyn family was from North Carolina originally, and they moved in the 1820s to Indiana. They were devout Quakers and hardcore abolitionists, which was likely at least part of why they left the Carolinas. Henderson, the older brother, started a fruit tree nursery in Indiana with brother John. They moved their operations to Salem, Iowa, in 1837. By that time, Henderson had married a girl named Jane Elizabeth Presnell. The two of them, in the early 1840s, built a really nice stone house with two secret compartments in the basement, which they used to stow away runaway slaves as part of the Underground Railway. In fact, Henderson and Elizabeth were so serious about the abolition of slavery that they were read out of meeting, basically excommunicated from the Salem Meeting of Friends. Most likely the other Quakers in the meeting house thought their abolitionist activities were too militant to square with the Quakers' mandate to work for peace. The Llewellyns responded by founding a new Quaker meeting house in Salem, the Salem Monthly Meeting of Anti-Slavery Friends, and carrying on. By the early 1840s, the Oregon Trail was starting to open up. Henderson had been obsessed with Oregon since several years earlier when he had found and read the memoirs of Lewis and Clark. A nasty winter that killed off a bunch of nursery stock was apparently the final straw for him, and he started gearing up to make the journey. Llewellyn had no intention of just showing up in Oregon and hoping for the best. He was a nurseryman, and he figured if he expected trees to be there in Oregon for him to go back into business with, he was going to have to bring them himself. To this end, he partnered with a neighbor and fellow nurseryman, William Meek. The plan was the two of them would both head for Oregon in separate family wagon groups, both of them bringing trees for the nursery that they intended to establish there. Llewellyn would leave first, Meek shortly after. For the journey, Llewellyn built a special heavy wagon with room for about 700 tiny trees and vines and shrubs, filled it with soil mixed with charcoal, and cramming as many trees into it as he could. The tree wagon was in the vanguard when the Llewellyn family hit the road in 1847. By this time, Henderson and Elizabeth had 8 children and one more on the way. They traveled with 2 other Quaker families, most likely drawn from the abolitionist meeting house that they helped found, the Hocketts and the Fishers. Along the way, they tried to travel with other immigrants, but friction developed because of the trees. The tree wagon was extraordinarily heavy and hence slow. It also had to be watered at every possible stop along the way. Also, it attracted noticeable attention from Indians, which made everyone very nervous, so the other emigrants forged ahead. Whether for this or other reasons, not only did the Llewellyns have no quote-unquote Indian trouble, but when Elizabeth went into labor during the Columbia River part of the journey, Indian friends were happy to load her into a canoe and paddle her to the Dalles for a medical attention. She gave birth to the family's 9th child, a boy named Oregon Columbia Llewellyn, on the way there. Oregon Columbia, by the way, went by OC his whole life. Then the powerful and dangerous Columbia Cascades Rapids had to be shot, trees and all. Again, their new Indian canoeist friends helped, retrieving a runaway flatboat that had missed the takeout point and was heading into more danger. By the time Henderson and Elizabeth got to their destination in Milwaukee, they'd lost only half of their trees, but they'd gained a child and, of course, some native friends along the way. They also gained the opportunity to start what would become one of Oregon's most important industries. Henderson Lewelling today is most well known as the father of the Oregon nursery industry. He's also somewhat famous, or notorious perhaps, for an episode much later in his life when he tried to found a free love cult in Honduras. But that, as podcast host Marcus Axford of the Welcome to Oregon podcast likes to say, is a story for another day. You can find an Offbeat Oregon article about it, though, if you search on our website. A search for Henderson Lewelling will get the job done, L-U-E-L-L-I-N-G. In Oregon, Henderson and Elizabeth settled in Milwaukee and set up their nursery. They soon found that, in Oregon at least, money really did grow on trees. Newly arrived settlers, most of whom had not tasted a fresh fruit in months, would pay plenty for a box of apples or plums. When Henderson's brother Seth arrived on the trail with brother John, he joined the family operation and basically took over the Milwaukee operations while Henderson traveled south to establish a nursery and orchards in the fast-growing San Francisco Bay Area. By this time, of course, the gold rush had started. This would become the Oakland suburb of Fruitvale. It is primarily Seth that we have to thank for the Bing cherry. Seth first cultivated a rich, deep black cultivar that he named the Black Republican. This, by the way, is one of the varieties used in high-end black cherry ice creams. Seth, who shared Henderson's enthusiasm for abolition, named the cherry after the slur he often heard from pro-slavery neighbors wishing to insult him. He joked that he was going to make them relish a black Republican whether they wanted to or not. And yeah, that probably worked. For what it's worth, it's my personal favorite kind of cherry. I've only had them once. Seth then crossed the Black Republican with the Royal Anne cultivar to create the famous Bing, which he named after his 6-foot-tall Manchurian Chinese orchard foreman, Ah Bing. "It's a big cherry, and Bing's big, and anyway, it's in his row," Seth said, according to his stepdaughter's oral history interview with WPA Folklore Project writer Sarah B. Wren. "So that shall be its name." Ah Bing, by the way, deserves to be better known. How much he had to do with the development of the Bing is unknown, but it was probably significant. Unfortunately, after spending most of his life in Oregon cultivating the state's best fruit, he made the mistake of traveling back to the old country to visit family and was blocked from returning home to Oregon by the Chinese Exclusion Act, which passed while he was abroad. Besides the cherries, Seth and John developed the golden prune, the sweet Alice apple, some improved rhubarbs and grapes, and a number of other fruits bearing the family name. Other later events hinged on the Lewelling success as well. Fellow Quaker John Minthorne's Oregon Land Company, 40 years later, made a specialty of developing orchards to sell, a business plan obviously dependent on the tradition the Lewellings imported. Without the Oregon Land Company, Minthorne's teenage nephew Herbert Hoover would likely not have gotten the early training in sound business practices that was to be so important in his early career as an engineer. Hoover, of course, would go on to become the greatest enemy of the third horseman of the apocalypse, famine, in the history of the world, with the possible exception of Green Revolution architect Norman Borlaug. For Herbert Hoover's journey, again, there's a couple of articles on Offbeat Oregon's website that you can look to and find quickly with a search for Herbert Hoover. By the way, the story of the Lewelling's journey is the basis for Deborah Hopkinson's children's book, Apples to Oregon, which was one of the Oregon Reads book selections for the 2009 Oregon Sesquicentennial Celebration. The book springboards off the Oregon Trail journey to generate a tall tale about the journey with the tree wagon. Key sources in this article included works by Tyler Boudreau, Charles Carey, and Sarah B. Wren. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. And by the way, if you haven't yet, check out our Offbeat Oregon books. They're a lot like these columns, only expanded and updated to take advantage of a less restrictive format. We've got Heroes and Rascals of Old Oregon, Love, Sex, and Murder in Old Oregon, Bad Ideas and Horrible People in Old Oregon, and eventually the plan is for 8 of them to be out, although how many there are out right now depends on when you hear this. They're a lot of fun and would look great on your bookshelf. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do or to find the full citations and visuals that go with today's show. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Offbeat Oregon History episodes are uploaded every weekday morning at around 6 a.m., so it'll be a couple of days before you get your next fix. But of course, Monday morning will be here before we know it. And that's the latest news from here in Offbeat Oregon's Sulphur Springs studio. So now it's time for you and me both to go out there and fill up the rest of the day and the weekend with good stuff. Bye now.